It is indeed. It is summer practice at the Greenbrier, courtesy of Flight by Yingling. Good to be with you.
This is so nice out here.
It is great. Oh. Okay, so that's the view we've got right now. We're looking Okay, so Seth's got the camera going here. If you're watching on YouTube and Twitch, you can kind of see what it looks like in the background here.
We were trying to keep it away off the fields completely in case anybody comes out to do rehab or something.
I'll give him a little quick little look at the mountains.
Yeah,
over there.
Okay.
Spin it around. Yeah, look at that. Look at that.
Oh, not my head. I got to get out of there.
Yeah, there we go.
A little bit of that.
Look at that, man.
I'm sorry to the radio people.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Well,
Sean and I are taking. Yeah. Hey, Sean, just let the camera do the talking for us. Yeah.
Okay,
no, but it's beautiful up here, and the weather is. I don't know. What do you think it is right now? About 60?
It is in the mid 60s. If I had to guess, I would guess 63.
It's
61.
It's overcast.
61 degrees and overcast.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
I haven't had a single swig of liquid this morning. I haven't felt.
I drank a Powerade.
I had my coffee, but that's about it.
I feel good, man.
Yeah.
I feel good.
This is incredible. If they wanted to spend 4 weeks up here, I wouldn't object, but I do feel guilty saying that because I know a lot of people really like going to training camp.
That is true.
But
yeah.
If you wanted to plan a trip up here, this is a gorgeous state.
It is,
oh,
but the practice this week at least is not open to the public. We should make
right, but if they would make it open to the public.
If they came here that long.
For the full camp.
Yeah, they came here
and
that
it's
long.
Really, I mean, it's just a beautiful state. I drove down through from the north part of the state. I crossed the Potomac River.
Mm-hmm.
As we discussed, I was a little less impressed with Washington crossing
right,
the
no,
Potomac.
Right, you're basically one of our founding forefathers.
I drove across in like 27 seconds.
Yeah.
And, but like I was just going through nothing but state parks and national forests the whole time, and it was incredible. It was just awesome.
It's really
no
pretty.
Cell service.
Yeah.
I got to just be alone with myself and nature.
Can you imagine being alone with Seth Payne's brain? That would be incredible.
It's hell is what it is. I've spent a lifetime doing it. It's ridiculous.
All right, let's get to what we've seen on the field here. Seth and I have been here 2 days. Day three today. We've not gotten word. We should check and see if we're getting pads today.
Well, we were talking about this in the yesterday after a couple
sending it to the Omar
after
group
a couple the tight ends were particularly frisky yesterday. Cade Stover and Dalton Schultz both involved in a couple of skirmishes. It was fun to see. Never felt like you're on the verge of an all out brawl or anything. But guys are getting a little testy. And we wondered, I wonder if D'Amico will kind of pull back a little bit. You got the preseason game coming up. Then you've got a combined practice against Carolina next week before the preseason game. And my thought was, no. I think that you come up here.
You got to maximize your minutes, man.
Right.
The team spent a lot of money to bring these guys up here.
Yeah, no, and you get to the end of the practice yesterday, and you can tell the energy level's different. And it's the one thing is you can have crisper practices with fewer mental errors and all of that. And, it doesn't have to be like, oh, that's a soft mentality or anything. I think D'Amico likes those first couple weeks of having to be out in the heat and push through it because it's as close to a Junction Boys environment that you're ever going to get these days.
Yeah.
You can kind of just create some mental toughness by having to battle the heat. But then there's the side of it where you don't want to wear guys down. You don't want them to get injured. You gotta get good, crisp physical practices in, but you don't want guys being injured. I think that's why you come up here.
No doubt.
My forecast is pads today and then tomorrow, because you got a preseason game on Saturday, tomorrow becomes like a normal Friday practice. That they probably go in just uppers or no pads at all.
Yeah.
Just have kind of a three-quarter speed practice.
Glorified walkthrough / three-quarter speed practice kind of thing. Yeah, I can see that. So we'll find out if there's pads today. But there were pads the last 2 days, and it's been really, really good. Here was D'Amico Ryans yesterday assessing day two.
Yeah, we had a really good day today at practice. I saw very competitive periods on both sides. Like, we had a tough physical short yardage period today, and it was a lot of back and forth. Guys did a great job up front, D-line, O-line. Those guys were competing and battling. That's what you see every day. Our receivers and DBs, those guys competing. Receivers making plays, DBs making plays on the football. We have a really competitive team. That's my takeaway from our camp thus far, and that's how it should be. So I'm excited just to see these guys go play against someone else. It is that time of camp where it's going to be a little more chirpy. You're going to see fights and scuffles happening, but it's just you get tired of hitting the same person. You get tired of going against the same schemes over and over again. So it's that time for us to go play a game.
I thought yesterday was, and we'll get into some of the details of yesterday in a second. I thought it was almost the ideal practice if you're a Texan fan. I thought each side, that's to the side that's going to be the linchpin for your team, the defense, had enough plays yesterday where you're like, yeah, these guys, this is backing up everything we've seen in camp. They're really, really good. I thought the offense got just enough yesterday, both in the ground game and through the air, to feel good about the direction it's going. Maybe the overall results you want better, but there was enough that they did out there well to where you feel like, okay, this thing's moving in the right direction.
Yeah, the physicality is the thing that this offense, I think the way Nick Caley wants to operate, you're going to have that. And you can't be a finesse offense the way that Nick Caley wants to run things. That was encouraging because that's also where you don't have to have five all pros on your offensive line. If you can operate that way, you just got to have blue collar lunch pal type of guys that are willing to just get gritty and get their pads low and root guys up and out of there. And you saw some evidence of that yesterday. The cool thing about that is that you also saw when Nick Chubb has good blocking in front of him, all right, that vision is still there, and he's got strong legs. I don't know if he's as explosive as he used to be, but he can grind out some yardage, and you can see the appeal there. He had one nice run of probably 15 to 30 yards or so, depending on whether or not a tackle was made here or there.
Yeah.
But that part of it, that looked good. And the pass protection remains a work in progress. The blitz pickup remains a work in progress. But it's early in camp where you've got a new offense going against a defense that's really dialed in, and it's going to be difficult. And yes, the Texans are going to face other good defenses this year, but that's where, they got to get better sometime between now and that point. But it's not after yesterday's practice, I felt a lot better than I did. It wasn't a great day for the offense, but I felt better about their progress yesterday than I did after Monday.
They made some plays at least, man. Like Monday was rough, and Tuesday there were at least some wow moments. And if you were just here watching casually as a fan and you had to pick a day to come, yesterday would have been the day way over Monday because you want to come to see at least a little bit of offensive fireworks.
Well, and I think the encouraging thing, too, is at times the quick game has looked really good.
Yes.
And you didn't really feel like you could rely on the quick game last year, especially at times where it felt like, all right, if defenses are trying to take away the deep ball, why are you not carving them up short and running the ball? And it turns out it's because hopefully the explanation is simply that Bobby Slowick was not scheming it that way.
When the ball...
Don't worry, Mark. We're clear to do this. Mark Vandermeer just walked by and saw our different setup, and we told him
hovering over us like a gargoyle. Yeah. Why are you faced this way? No, I'm just joking. Danny's not doing that. When the ball gets out quick, CJ looks like 2023 CJ.
Yeah.
You know, like when it's boom, first read, boom, some quick game, like you said, that looks really, really good. The fact of the matter is, by and large, he doesn't have time to do much more than that going against this first-team defense right now.
I think the other thing that would happen, though, today, too, though, Sean, that might make sense is if they go no pads but then end up doing – you know what? They can't go 4 days in a row of pads.
Well, it's only been 2 days.
I know, but if they went pads today, then they wouldn't go tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah.
So I could see them maybe going no pads today and then pads tomorrow.
Maybe.
That's my prediction now.
Okay, we'll see.
Good physical day of practice yesterday, and then – probably no pads today, but then I they still might go pads
if we
tomorrow.
Get fights today with no pads, that's how you know things are chippy.
Yes. It feels like that's the bare knuckles version of it somehow.
You know guys are sick of each other, no pads fights.
Dalton Schultz comes out with with Ultimate Warrior bands around his biceps.
Tassels, yeah, that'd be
wearing
great.
Wearing a bandana.
That'd be great. Jaden Higgins' show yesterday. He had some big plays. You know, people are always asking how the rookie's doing, how guys looking. Jaden Higgins had a huge day. Like three. If these were Astro catches in center field, those would have been like 4-star and 5-star catches.
And I think that's what you hope to see out of the guys that you're planning on. And remember, you know, Jaden Higgins is a second rounder. Jalen Knoll's a third rounder. It's not like they're top 10 picks or whatever. But you want to see those guys come in and dominate the twos. And I think when they're in against the twos, they're doing really, really well. It gets more competitive for the offense in general when the ones are going against the ones. But it's hard to find anything to pick out negative about Jaden Higgins and Jalen Knoll right now. Other than just the flat out generic saying, hey, they're rookies, they got to prove that they can do it in the regular season, et cetera, et cetera. But they're right on pace and on schedule right now.
Kamari Lassiter has been one of the best players out here. He was the best player out here yesterday. He had two picks, one on a deep ball to Nico Collins early in practice, another one on kind of an intermediate route to Xavier Hutchinson where he just kind of out-physicaled Xavier Hutchinson, tipped the ball. grabbed it. Might have been a pick six if we were playing a real game. And then had a nice pass breakup on almost an identical route to Nico that he got the pick on, going the other way down the field. But it was he knocked that ball away. Kamari's been excellent this camp, and D'Amico Ryan said so after practice.
Kamari continues to improve just his details, and that's what sticks out about him. Like a year two player who doesn't feel like a year two player, he's continuing to ascend, continuing to make plays, continue to push himself to be in those tough spots, you know, going against Nico, going against Higgins. Like, those are tough guys to go against, and he battles every single day, and he finds a way to make a play. And I think he made two picks today on the football. So it's impressive to see such a young player who's always dialed in, always bringing great energy and great emotion to our defense, and the guys, they really vibe with that, and he's a spark plug for our team.
He had another pass breakup too on a deep ball intended for Nico Collins that just, I mean, he was running pace for pace with Nico, but I think it was just wasn't a great ball by CJ.
Yeah.
That CJ was probably trying to put that ball. I thought at first it might have been maybe he was trying to go back shoulder, but it makes more sense that he was trying to put it between Nico and the sideline and it just didn't get there.
It was a great catch by Lassiter. I mean, for him.
Well, I was thinking about the pass breakup.
Oh, the pass breakup. Yeah. Sorry. I thought the interception was really good hands by Kamari. By the way, confirmation on your hypothesis about practice, Seth, today.
Oh, okay. No pads.
No pads today. Light practice today for the exact reason you cited. Days in a row with pads, this would violate the rule.
I was speculating because I didn't know whether I was allowed to divulge it or not.
You knew
so
exactly.
That was faux speculation.
Gotcha. Come on, act smart.
I can't. I'm too honest.
Good point. I don't know if I can put that out there.
Being honest about how I was kind of lying.
I don't feel like telling the world that they're going to be in a light workout today is going to lose a Rams game for them in week one. I think we're okay. Offensive line. We've not talked much about the offensive line today, so let's talk about them right now. Ariante Ursery still with the ones at left tackle yesterday. Titus Howard still right tackle. How much in general are you surprised that Titus Howard is getting run at right tackle right now?
No, I was more surprised that he was only playing right guard early on, because I think the plan is right now that they're going to continue to use Titus Howard the way they have in the past, which is what Nick always says is get the five best guys on the field.
Yeah.
I think that Titus is more psychologically like for it now than maybe he was in the past, and part of that is also that, you know, they tweaked this. Part of it might be, hey, they kind of gave him some insurance with the way they tweaked this contract and guaranteed some more of the money, but that I think Titus understands now that being a guy who can play guard is way more of an asset these days than it was in the past.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the being exclusively a right tackle isn't as good these days as being a guy that can be a versatile offensive lineman.
The guard pay scale is pretty good out there.
Yeah, that
days.
Part of it too.
Yeah.
And it, just psychologically though too, it's almost kind of like there's always been more, there's been more of an aura about being a tackle than being a guard. But now in the modern NFL, and with an extra game added, and because offensive linemen just aren't as durable as they used to be, it's that you've got a, like, versatility will get you the recognition and respect just as much as just being a really good right tackle. You got Larry Allen's a prime example of that. I mean, Larry Allen's a Hall of Fame offensive lineman who played every position on the offensive line other than center.
Yeah.
And that's what he gets a lot of respect still to this day for, was how good he was at all those positions. Bruce Matthews, too, had a lot of versatility to him.
Let's hear from D'Amico Ryans on that, on the offensive line. This is D'Amico on the offensive line physicality.
Yeah, today from our run game, you saw the level of physicality and intensity that it takes to run the football from our offensive line. So that's where it all starts. They had the right mindset. You got the right mindset, you're going to move people off the line of scrimmage. So that's where it starts. So they're ready to roll from that standpoint. They had a good day in the run game.
Okay, so that was D'Amico on that. Now here's D'Amico on what we were just talking about, which is kind of the versatility that's needed. The question was about Ariante Ursery, the rookie, moving over to left tackle. But D'Amico says anything can happen.
During this time of camp, so I tell it, guys, everything is an evaluation. And I mix it up on coaches, like, the morning of the practice, right, to see how coaches handle it, to see how players handle being moved into a different position. Because as we know, we line up in a game, anything can happen, right? Guys are injured and things, your plans change very quickly. So how do you adapt? How do you adjust on the fly? So coaches have to be able to adapt and adjust well. Also, players. Tay has done a really good job over at left tackle. We bumped Titus out to right, just mixing it up as much as possible. And that's not the only position. I mean, we move the guys around, linebacker, D-line. Guys are moving all over the place just to see, you know, what can guys handle. And that's the point of camp. We wouldn't be able to do this any other time throughout the season. So I put a lot on guys mentally in camp to see what they can handle.
D'Amico's a pop quiz guy.
Yeah.
Basically a pop quiz. Hey, here, hey, coaches, guess what? Tytus Howard is right tackle.
You got to be ready for anything.
Ready for any kind
of
action.
He feels like he's the kind of coach that would all of a sudden shut off the hot water in the showers.
Yeah.
See how you guys are going to adapt.
Now what?
Head on a swivel.
Now what?
All the time.
You ever been to Arrowhead Stadium? That place is a dump. The showers could go out at any time.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've come kind of 180 on this. That I used to be the first guy to say, listen, offensive linemen need to be able to practice their position and their position alone and get good at it, especially when they're rookies. And going back to various disappointing offensive line selections from the past with the Texans, where the Xavier Suafilo, remember, was the guy they had him playing like right guard, left guard, right tackle his rookie year, and I would get very frustrated because I'm like, just let him play one position. I've switched on that just because I think there's a lot to be said for, I'd rather have five guys who are versatile and can play multiple positions than have two stud all pros and then three jamokes that you just can't trust.
Yeah.
Because of everything we talked about earlier. So I've had to think hard. I've had to take meditation retreats to come to this point and be comfortable and cool with it. But I'm at a spot where I'm pretty cool with it.
If you have the right coaches and the right players, that's a smart thing to do.
Yeah.
If you have the wrong coaches and the wrong players trying to do that, then it's not going to work.
That's
true. You know, so it's not working with Xavier Suafilo and a Bill O'Brien staff. Different than these guys and a D'Amico Ryan's.
You know, a part of it is, I think, because I've had so many orthopedic surgeries. I just felt good. It was like, okay, I'm going to go to a knee specialist.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go to an ankle specialist.
Yeah.
I didn't want to go into some country doctor.
I do everything.
Slash veterinarian.
Yeah.
You're like, of course, yeah. You know I'm better because I can do it all. Those other fancy lads, they're trying to just focus on one little body part.
Yeah.
You got brain issues?
Yeah.
Let me down. Tinker around up there.
I'll let you choose which buck knife I use to do the procedure. Pick. I got 10 of them right here.
I'm not much of a fan of this antiseptic environment. I like to feel your body got to learn to fight off the infection from the get-go.
All right. Payne and Pendergast.
Get up on my kitchen table and let's have at it.
Payne and Pendergast. By the way, Arrowhead Stadium, I had a good time.
You want any more chillins or not? I'll snip the vas deferens in a heartbeat. Use toenail clippers for that one.
There you go. All right. Payne and Pendergast. We are live at the Greenbrier in West Virginia, and we are acting like it right now. All right. Up next, D'Amico Ryans yesterday did name the most consistent player on the Texans. I would have guessed several players just based on depth chart. Before I got to this one, and we got some petty cast leftovers we didn't get to yesterday.
Good, because I'm still feeling petty.
I know, I am too. So let's do a few of those. We're live in West Virginia. Stay there, Payne and Pendergast. All right, Payne and Pendergast, we are live in West Virginia. Just got done chit-chatting with Texan sideline reporter John Harris. He's getting his game face on over there, getting ready to scope out practice.
John and I were talking about nerdy offensive coordinators and how it's kind of, okay, so this is my prediction for the league this year. It's that defenses have spent a decade adjusting to aerial attacks, and offensive coordinators have gotten jobs because they're these brilliant whiz kids that understand the passing game in a way that nobody else does. And a lot of us that have watched the NFL for a long time, we know that the pendulum swings back and forth. And we're watching last year, and we're saying, like, we're watching, and people on television, some of them former quarterbacks, are talking about, I don't know how we handle all of this cover two. And they're acting like it's a modern innovation or something. And guys that have been around a long time, like, there's so many answers. And you just have to be able to execute right now. And you guys can't do it because you don't understand anything about the physical element of football. And you're just, everything in your mind is a problem to be solved with the passing game, not the run game. And then you look and you see the Ravens or the Eagles or any of the teams that can really major in the run game, what they're able to do last year. So there's a lot of teams that are realizing, okay, we got to get back to some old school punishing
you
physical.
You and Johnny were over here talking
punishing
about
and physical
beating
football.
People up and punishing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I was so sitting next to Ogre from Revenge of the Nerds.
And it isn't. And that's a problem, though, too. It's that there is a lot of mental work that goes into having a good rushing attack.
For sure.
It's not like you just – but a lot of these nerd offensive coordinators think, like, well, you just put a body on a body and then you have the running back. Go die, you nerd.
Ogre.
Yeah.
Ogre. You are Ogre.
So so there's an element to – it's going to be interesting to watch some teams this year where I think you're going to see – you're going to see a lot more multiple tight end sets. You're going to see more fullbacks. You're going to see a lot of teams start to take advantage
of
that.
Do you feel like this is what the Texans are trying to become?
I think that's what they're trying to do. Yeah, I think that's what they like to be.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's not – but part of that is you can't be – you got to be committed to actually being able to run the ball. And you got to know how to create and be an architect of a run game. And I don't – like Bobby Slowick never really had any experience in that world. He was the consummate pass game guy. He'd been a passing game coordinator. He had never been a position coach. So when it came to the actual fundamentals of doing that stuff, I don't think he really I don't think he really got it.
He was a pass game guy who had no problem handing the ball off on first and second down to create third and 11.
Right, right. No, I was talking to you this morning before the show. Yeah. I was talking to you at 4 a.m. about this. It does feel – these last few years, I felt like, and I had a conversation with a young guy yesterday where I kind of felt the same way. It was like in the late 90s during the internet bubble, stock bubble, where all these kids, all these 20-somethings were saying like, yeah, brick and mortar is dead. No, you got to go. You got to buy Perfumania. Cisco, that's where it's at. And all
Perfumania.
This. And it's,
oh,
like,
yeah.
It's like, all right, there's some element. There's a tiny element of truth to what you're saying, but you really don't know what you're talking about because you haven't lived through the wars.
Yeah.
You know? You haven't. You need to go bankrupt in this bubble so you can learn the lesson about bubbles to
come. You need to have a bubble pop from underneath you.
Yeah, so there are a lot of guys out there right now that genuinely don't know what the hell they're doing when it comes to being a complete offensive coordinator. I think Nick Caley has seen he's come up in a different environment, and I think he sees the world a little bit differently.
That's what it feels like. Yeah. That's what it feels like. Exactly an hour from now, Texans president Mike Tomlin will join us out here. We'll get the latest on where things are with the new headquarters, with the stadium, how the first 5-6 months been going as the team president here. Exactly how much does it cost to send the team to the ground? I don't know. He's going to tell us that. But we'll bring up the expense of the Greenbrier and see if he starts to squirm a little bit because he's in charge of the business side.
Adjusting for fuel prices and all that stuff, I think just a charter, I want to say a charter for a road trip, used to be back in the day like $250,000. Wow. I'm sure that's gone up more.
Dude, you know? I have no idea.
That's a lot of money, though.
Yeah, it's a lot of money,
To rent a 747.
And rent out a whole resort. You know, you got however many rooms you're renting, and then all those resources here.
I was just thinking, though, if the baseline is $250,000 just for the travel, and then you go up on top of
millions.
All that.
Yeah. D'Amico Ryans was asked yesterday about a specific player and said that this was the most consistent player on the team. And his name, I would have had to guess a lot. Tommy Togiai.
Yeah.
Defensive tackle. Here's why. Here's D'Amico Ryans on Tommy Togiai.
And with Tommy, when I talk about being consistent, growing every day, Tommy, if I had to bet, he's our most consistent player probably on our team. This guy is, he was in our building working like the first player in February. He's in the weight room working out. And he's never missed a beat. Like, he's always working. He's always doing it the right way. I can always highlight Tommy in a meeting because his technique, effort, fun, everything is going to be on point every single time. And it's not by happenstance. Like, this guy is working in the background to be where he is. And so it's cool for younger guys to see a guy like Tommy who's bounced around. But, man, he's stuck here with us because it's a guy you can trust. And that's what we build here in training camp. You got to show your teammates that, man, you can trust me. I'm going to do it exactly how the coaches are asking me to do it. So Tommy is a guy who has all of my trust in the world.
Yeah, no, Tommy Togiai is a classic. He's a good test for coaches because when you watch him or you look at him, he doesn't necessarily – he's not like a combine hero type of guy. And he doesn't necessarily look all that fluid athletically. But when you watch him, you see like, well, he just keeps making plays. And his technique is really good. And those are the kinds of guys that sometimes slip through the cracks because coaches see him or scouts see him and they feel like they already got the book written on him. So to have kind of a little bit of humility and watch to see, and he had some nice reps yesterday.
He did.
In the one-on-one pass rush, and you've seen him show up in the backfield relatively consistently. So that type of guys, when you're talking about a defensive line that's going to rotate a bunch of guys, he's a really intriguing one.
Yeah, I mean, well, he's a guy, he's bounced around. Like, he's not some guy they signed as an undrafted free agent last year. He was a fourth-round pick in 2021. He's going into his fifth year in the league.
Cleveland to Jacksonville to Cleveland to Atlanta,
yeah,
and then Houston.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And he's in the Jacksonville. He was there. That was the thing. He spent his first 2 years with the Browns and got released at the end of camp, and then went to the Jags practice squad and got released 4 days later. That's when you probably feel you're like starting to get on that gerbil wheel. Like,
that's got to be scary.
You know,
man.
Like you get drafted in the fourth round, you make a team, you probably feel like, all right, well, this will be where I am, and then I'll get to my end of my contract, and we'll see where my career goes. You get a wake up call 2 years in. You go to the Jags and you're cut a week in. From the Jag, you know, and then, like you said, back to Cleveland, to Atlanta. And I say it seems like he's found a home here, except there's a lot of bodies on that defensive line.
The defensive ends
He
alone.
Played well for the Texans at the end of the year last year.
People were asking about Micah Parsons. I think mostly jokingly, because, like, obviously, for the Texans to bring on Micah Parsons right now, sure, he would help the team. It would be be drastically irresponsible, because they've already got they're a lot of money invested in Neil Hunter. They're going to be spending a lot of money on Will Anderson very soon. And then they've just got a lot of depth at defensive end. With guys that you feel good about, and some of whom you've already paid a good chunk of money too.
Yep.
So it's in defensive tackle, they don't have as many top level or like high ceiling types of guys, but I think for the rotation, they got a lot of guys that they feel good about. So to be a guy like Tommy Togiai, it's going to be hard to displace guys with experience like Fadakasi and Rankins and Mario Edwards and Tim Settle Jr. Like, right there, you've got a four deep already. So guys are fighting for that fifth or sixth spot that they might keep with an extra defensive tackle.
It is the depth on this team.
Well, Kurt Heinisch is as well.
He's one who's still on the pup list here too. So it's Heinisch. It goes to show you, those are barometers for where this team is from a depth standpoint. Like, Heinisch as an undrafted guy kind of easily made the team in the Lovie Smith year.
Yeah.
And now you got guys like Togiai and Heinisch that are really battle. It's an uphill battle
Tafuna.
To make the team. Yeah. So that's, it's a good thing for the Texans for sure. All right, Payne and Pendergast. All right, let's do this. Let's take one here. I got the Pettycast leftovers from yesterday that I want to hit, but I want to make sure we're doing it in a time slot, in a time frame of more than 2 minutes. So we'll take one here. We're going to circle back to Texans training camp. Certainly the 9 o'clock hour will be Texans heavy, highlighted by Mike Tomlin, the president of the team, who's going to join us out here at 9:30. Cal and Hannah McNair are going to join us at 9:30 on the show tomorrow as well. Seth's talking to Danielle Hunter today after practice. I'm talking to Titus Howard today after practice. We got you guys covered on social media and on here with everything. And we'll be on with the In the Loop guys at 12:40, 5:20 today with the guys on the drive, and 7:40 tonight with the guys on Area 45. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. We are live at summer practice at the Greenbrier thanks to Flight by Yuengling. So today the agenda appears to be because some of the players are starting to come out, they are not in pads today. So it's I think it's going to be a lighter practice today. C.J. Stroud is scheduled to meet with the media after practice today. I'm looking forward to that press conference, seeing where C.J.'s at. We're probably not going to see much today that's going to alter where he's at with the offense.
Well, when he was on with Evan Washburn on CBS yesterday, he gave some good answers about just kind of he didn't say difficulty, but just, I guess, the challenge of adding all of these things to his plate in terms of how much he's going to be directing the offense. And it's not an excuse. I think it's an explanation when I say it, that it is a lot. And it's a matter of, there's a lot of muscle memory in just getting the reps to where you should expect some clunkiness from the offense at this point. But I'm also not saying that, hey, you should feel great about the fact that the offense hasn't looked good.
Like, right.
No, you should be uneasy until you see the offense and C.J. Stroud and everybody else looking the way that I think that C.J. Stroud is capable of looking. But there's very rational explanations for it. It's just that at some point you got to get over that hump and start, making noticeable progress.
I agree. So we got that today. And then Seth's going to be talking to Danielle Hunter after practice. I'm going to talk to Titus Howard after practice, and we'll have some of the audio from that as we roll on here this week. It's been a great week here.
I'm going to try to pass block Danielle Hunter.
Okay, let me know when that happens.
By the way, it's hard, though. Pass blocking is hard. That's
yeah.
A, yeah.
Yeah.
You do that.
Daniel Hunter.
No, we didn't mess around. Like, it's crazy. No, you think, like, hey, a defensive lineman should be able to pass block a little bit. No, not a lick.
Yeah.
It's everything is so completely different about the way you move and everything. So just even when you're messing around in drills and everything and you try to pass block one of your teammates, they're like, oh, I suck at this.
This is why I'm a defensive tackle.
This is awful. Yeah.
Yep. Hey, we did a petty cast yesterday, and we didn't get through. We were so petty that there were leftovers.
Yeah.
That we didn't get to. I figured this would be a good segment to do some petty cast leftovers.
And you guys should appreciate our professionalism in this regard, because do you know how hard it is to be petty when you're in a beautiful natural environment like this?
Oh, yeah.
The fresh air.
It's not easy.
Barely any cell phone service or data anywhere, so you can't even, your mind isn't all cluttered.
It's not easy.
Yeah.
And Seth and I are poetry in motion. We do it so easily.
That's right.
Yeah, man. All right, so the
muscle
two,
memory.
The two that were left over, yes, from being petty all the time, mm-hmm. every day. The two leftovers, the big ones I wanted to get to, because these are always fun. Nick Turturro, noted actor, yeah. noted actor, and what was it? NYPD Blue back in the day. One of those cop shows he was
I
on.
I only know him as the brother of Nick Turturro.
Of John Turturro.
John Turturro,
yeah, John Turturro, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, or as an angry Yankees fan. That's probably what he's best known as these days if you're on social media. He's back to, he liked the Yankees for a little bit, but no. He's back to hating them again.
Where's the pride on his team? Where's the f***ing pride? Guys taking strike threes, looking like, swing the f***ing bat. The other guy can't hit him, swings at everything. What the f*** happened to this guy Wells? What happened to him? They look like they're going through the motions. I don't know. Maybe they're not, but they look like it. And these f***ing beards, get rid of them. Get rid of them. We got to get Yankee pride back. We got to restore something with this team, with this organization. Something is so wrong. It's really just, it's like someone just said, pathetic. This is pathetic. And I continue to watch because I'm an addict. I have a sickness watching this shit.
He went full Steinbrenner.
He's full.
You never go full Steinbrenner.
He's three.
No.
He's 3 days away from exhuming Steinbrenner's corpse.
These guys with their facial hair,
their beard,
looking like a bunch of damned hippies,
and their seven-figure salaries.
Ah, the Aaron Boone. I like it because Nick Turturro very aggressively asked the same questions we've always asked about the Yankees.
Yeah,
like why does Aaron Boone still have a job?
Oh,
and
my
I'm,
God.
You know how I am with baseball managers.
Yeah,
I'm very careful to. I don't like blaming a baseball manager because there's only so many things they can do, and by and large, it's you've got professional baseball players executing their job on the baseball diamond, and yet I can't sit and watch the Yankee. I mean, I can totally do it and enjoy it,
yeah,
but watch them underperform year after year after mm-hmm. year, spending boatloads and boatloads of money trading for three relievers and then blowing
it
at a six-run lead first day they come.
Great.
It's beautiful.
Yeah And
it's at the very least, it's a little bit of a, it should make you feel good because at the very least, yeah, the Yankees are the best demonstration of that. It's not as simple as just buying yourself a championship.
Right.
The Mets, actually, in the last couple of years, too. Good example of, yeah, look, now, the teams that are the best in the league consistently also tend to spend the most money.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not as simple as just buying a championship,
no,
Yankees.
Man. Yeah. Different champions every year for the last however many years.
I mean, there's 12-year-old Yankees fans that have no clue that their team was actually once an incredible force.
They were the gold standard for a long time.
Their parents and grandparents tell them stories about it, but they don't believe it.
It's getting harder and harder to believe, for sure, yeah.
It's like believing in I won't say that.
Don't spoil it.
Believing in various things that sometimes kids believe in.
Yeah.
You know, like that they're, never mind. That their parents love each other.
Nah, come on. That was uncalled for. That was uncalled for. In 55% of the homes, they actually do love each other. Kids, if you're in the car right now, your parents are part of the 55%.
Well, there's some that are, okay, some parents get divorced and they do love each other, but it's just not right.
Yeah.
But then there's other parents that stay together, but they don't love each other.
Yeah, that's not good.
They're just committed to the cause.
Right. Yeah.
There's like a 25% chance your parents love each other.
Why are you together? Tax purposes. All right. We continue with our petty cast leftovers. Colin Cowherd, this got a lot of run, including actually getting recognized by the person who he was targeting with this take.
Yeah.
Colin Cowherd, not a fan of guys wearing ball caps backwards or visors backwards in prominent positions.
Yes.
Presidential type positions like quarterback and NFL head coach. Yeah.
And then Colin Cowherd does this thing where he does where he has this ability to like take something that you agree with and then murder it. Even like to the point where like, no, you're agreeing with this for all the wrong reasons.
By the end, by the end you're agreeing with the other side. Here's Colin Cowherd on Dallas Cowboys head coach Brian Schottenheimer, who everybody calls Shoddy. Wearing a backwards visor at his press conference, which, mind you, is in front of a backdrop that has a bunch of Bank of America symbols on it. Kind of like the Texans have the Xfinity on there.
That's right.
So keep that in mind when you hear this take.
You know, I don't like backward hats. What's worse is a backward visor. That's a two-win team. I'm taking away four wins. So when you sit in front of a podium, you're representing the Cowboys, you're representing Bank of America, you're representing a $12 billion corporation. I think you got to do better as a head coach than a visor backwards. There's a reason that country clubs and private clubs, you have to wear collared shirts and jackets. There's a reason for that. Like, there's a standard. I don't want to look like a guy that's here to move my couch. Like, I want you to do better than that. That's awful. That's so bad.
Someone needs to ask D'Amico the next time he does a press conference, how do you feel representing Xfinity?
You know what? That, Colin Cowherd is the classic, the person in the sports media industry who still, there's got to be a part of him that's conflicted because he feels like I'm in sports. Like, he wants it to be something other than what it is.
Yeah.
He wants it to be a higher elevated status or whatever it might be. Representing the Bank of America. What the hell are you talking about, Colin Cowherd? He's a football coach. It's a blue-collar job. It's one of my favorite things Tom Coughlin ever said in one of our team meetings. He's like, look, at the end of the day, this is a blue-collar job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, look, we make a lot of money, and it's an awesome living, but never forget, it's a blue-collar job.
Yes.
Now, I do not like the backwards visor. I'm not a fan of that look.
I bet Tom Coughlin wouldn't like it either.
Right, right. And yet, it's for none of the reasons that he cited right there.
No.
Yeah, he just butchered me not like now I'm forced to like backwards visors.
I know why you don't like it, and I know very simply it looks stupid.
It's got a little bit of that that suburban cocky dad look to it.
Oh, you know?
Also a little bit of the guy that takes a country club a little too seriously. I don't know. There's a vibe, and that's not fair. That's not fair.
Takes country club a little too seriously. Is out at games only coaching his kid from the sidelines.
That guy's the worst.
That guy's
his
the worst.
Kid's got all the best gear, but he's like the eighth best kid on the baseball team.
And it's one thing to do that in baseball, which is kind of like a team sport with a bunch of individuals doing things.
Yeah.
When they're out there doing it like in a true team sport where you actually like lean on your teammates and you're telling, hey, Tommy, just run up there and go kick the ball. Like,
there's some TikTok account where it's hockey dads or it's like suburban dads or whatever, but it's all
I didn't need you telling me this.
A bunch of guys walking around almost like robots, and they've got their sleeveless fleeces on and everything.
Dude, you just ruined the rest of my week.
Holding their Starbucks up high, you know, with a big grin on their face.
You know,
that's what it reminds me of.
I was already wasting time on ChatGPT last night. I was having ChatGPT describe things in the voice of Jim Rome.
Yeah. Those are pretty good.
They were funny, especially the one where he described herpes in the voice of Jim Rome.
So I didn't want to stick up for Brian. I didn't want to wake up this morning sticking up for Brian Schottenheimer.
And yet.
Look, Colin, I'm sorry. You chose to be in sports.
Yeah, man.
This is not, don't make it something that it isn't. It's not a corporate job.
No.
It's not a Fortune 500 executive suite type of deal.
Can you imagine at the next Bank of America stockholders meeting, there's like five guys in suits up at the desk, and then Brian Schottenheimer with his backwards visor on, explaining the EBITDA
comes up, talking about the importance of a diversified portfolio. No, that's not what it
Still
is, Colin.
Still sweaty coming off the practice
right,
field.
It's a blue-collar job. Tom Coughlin can tell you that it's a blue-collar job.
Yep.
What makes you better than Tom Coughlin?
That's right.
You know?
That's right. Yep, 100%. All right. I'm glad we did that. That was good. It felt good.
Got the petty out.
Yeah, man. All right, 9 o'clock hour coming up. We shifted the clock around a little bit for those of you that are into that kind of thing. So we get a nice long
segment.
Those of
you who like routine and order.
Listening to the show
every day.
You guys
can go take your successful, productive lives and shove it.
That's right.
This is a blue-collar radio show.
Seth, let's get our visors and put them on backwards.
Yeah.
Here we go. All right, 9 o'clock hour coming up. We'll talk to Mike Thoman, president of the Texans, at the bottom of the hour.
We got to spin. We got to spin the camera.
And we're
going to
spin the cameras around. There's actual football things going on.
You guys can't. You can't. You're not privy to these secrets.
You're on the YouTube and Twitch. Be ready. We're going to go in a big spin right here. C.J. Stroud sat down with Evan Washburn from CBS Sports, sideline reporter for CBS. How do you view last season? I thought this was an interesting answer from C.J. Stroud. We'll get into that in the 9 o'clock hour. Live from West Virginia, it's Payne and Pendergast. Stay there.